Let's turn to John chapter 18, Yeshua's arrest, his preliminary examinations before Annas, Caiaphas, and Pilate, Peter's denials, and the leader's choice of Barabbas instead of Yeshua. What a choice. We've been walking with Yeshua through the book of John. We're at the end of the life of the most important man who ever lived. That man is also the Messiah and the Son of God and the one and only Savior of humanity, able to rescue us from the real and deadly forces of Satan and the demons, sin and our sin nature, death and hell. It's Yeshua's last day on earth. It's a very special day, the first day of Passover. It's the day Messiah will die a very special death as God's Passover lamb who takes away the sin of the world. That makes this day one of the most important days in history. Yeshua ate his final meal, a Passover Seder, with his most important followers, the men he will entrust with his ongoing mission of world salvation. During the meal, Yeshua gave his disciples his final teachings. He prayed his great prayer that we considered last week. Now he will be arrested, given several examinations and trials, be tortured and crucified. And to make matters worse, he will be abandoned by most of his followers and denied three times by Simon Peter. John 18, verse 1, when he had finished praying, one of the very greatest prayers ever prayed, if not the greatest prayer ever prayed, Yeshua left with his disciples and crossed the Kidron Valley. On the other side, there was a garden, and he and his disciples went into it. They were immediately east of the city on the Mountain of Olives. The Jewish leaders very much wanted to eliminate Yeshua, who was extremely popular among many of the Jewish people. This is Jerusalem. This is Passover. There were hundreds of thousands of people in and around Jerusalem there to celebrate Passover, many of whom supported the young miracle-working rabbi. This was a dangerous situation for the Jewish leaders. And so they sent a formidable force to arrest Yeshua. Now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place because Yeshua had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came to the garden, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and the Pharisees. They were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. This well-equipped force included people loyal to the leaders, Roman soldiers, and the traitor Judas, to ensure that Yeshua would be arrested. Yeshua, knowing all that was going to happen to him, John specifically wants us to know that Yeshua was not surprised by any of the events that are about to take place. He was not foolishly walking into a trap. He knew exactly what was coming and still had the courage to face it. He knew what God wanted to happen, and he submitted himself to the will of God. Yeshua, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Yeshua of Nazareth," they replied. "I am he," Yeshua said. And Judas the traitor was standing there with them. When Yeshua said, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground, because I think they were afraid of the miracle-working rabbi. Everyone knew he was doing miracles. Maybe they were thinking about Elijah, who, when he was being arrested, called down fire from heaven, which incinerated a formidable force of 100 soldiers and their officers. Maybe they were familiar with that story and thinking about that. Throughout his ministry, Yeshua had protected his disciples. He had taken the brunt of the opposition. The good shepherd protected his sheep once again. Again, he asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Yeshua of Nazareth," they said. Yeshua answered, "I told you that I am he. If you're looking for me, then let these men go." And the disciples were not arrested. Yeshua protected them as he said he would. Earlier that night, Yeshua told these men that all of them would survive the coming ordeal, which is exactly what happened. And John tells us this happened so that the words he had spoken would be fulfilled. "I have not lost one of those you gave me." Yeshua was a true prophet. He was never, ever wrong. In contrast to Yeshua's calm acquiescence, which was based on his knowledge of the will of God and submission to the will of God, was Peter's response. Peter assumed that it was his duty to defend his rabbi and Lord, and so he courageously attacked a member of the larger force. Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Note the details that are recorded. It was the servant of the high priest who was injured. The name of the servant was Malchus. The injury was to his right ear. His right ear was cut off. This lets us know that this was written based on the testimony of someone who was there, who was a witness. But Peter, although loyal and courageous, was wrong to use his sword. Yeshua knew his father wanted him to be arrested and executed, and he had made his decision to do what God wanted, no matter how painful it would be. And so Yeshua stopped Peter from further well-meaning but wrong attacks. Yeshua commanded Peter, "Put away your sword. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me?" Put away your sword. Too often, the church has been too quick to use the sword, to resort to violence to defend what we think are Yeshua's best interests or our best interests. I'm thinking about things like the Crusades and the Inquisition and the pogroms directed against the Jewish people of Europe. I'm thinking about justifications for slavery. I am thinking about Western colonialism used to promote Christianity. I'm thinking about the violence also caused by our own words and actions as individuals that abuse or injure or violate those around us, especially our spouses or children. We need to be very careful before we use the sword, before we use violence in defense of what we think are our interests or Yeshua's interests. Yeshua was arrested. He was bound. He was brought before one of the powers that be for a pre-trial examination. Then the detachment of soldiers with its commander and the Jewish officials arrested Yeshua. They bound him. They brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year, Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jewish leaders that it would be good if one man died for the people, which John reminds us is exactly what is happening. Unknowingly and with evil motives, the Jewish leaders, who were far from God, were advancing God's great plan to make atonement available for the Jewish people and the peoples of the world through the unfair killing of Yeshua. Like modern writers telling a story with different characters and subplots, John now shifts the scene to one of Yeshua's key disciples, Simon Peter, and another disciple, and I think it was John, our author, who out of humility does not mention himself by name. Simon Peter and another disciple were following Yeshua. They had more courage than the rest. They did not abandon Yeshua like the rest. They were following. Because this disciple was known to the high priest, which lets us know that this disciple, John, came from a very prominent family. The high priest was one of the highest leaders of the nation, and the high priest knew this disciple. It would be like one of us being known to a senator or the governor and having access to the senator or the governor in his home. How many of you have a relationship with one of our senators or the governor like that? I don't see too many hands raised. This disciple was no simple, ordinary fisherman. Because this disciple was known to the high priest, he went with Yeshua into the high priest's courtyard. But Peter had to wait outside at the door. The other disciple, who was known to the high priest, came back, spoke to the servant girl on duty there, and brought Peter in. John used his familiarity with one of Israel's most powerful men to allow Peter access into the courtyard of the high priest. Next comes something truly awful, the first of Peter's three denials. And keep in mind Yeshua's words, which Peter had heard just a few hours earlier. Keep in mind Yeshua's words, which Peter had heard. If you deny me before men, I will deny you before my Father. If you deny me before human beings, I will deny you before my Father. You aren't one of this man's disciples too, are you? She asked Peter. He replied, I'm not. Peter, who just a few hours earlier had proclaimed his willingness to lay down his life in order to remain loyal to Yeshua, just a few hours later denied his association with Yeshua. Fascinating what a few hours difference can make in people's actions and attitudes. Just a few hours. And like a good writer, now John sets the stage for denial number two. It was cold, and the servants and officials stood around a fire they had made to keep warm. Peter also was standing with them, warming himself. John now shifts the scene back to Yeshua being examined at the house of Annas. Meanwhile, the high priest questioned Yeshua about his disciples, trying to ascertain probably how many they were, how potentially dangerous they were, specific information so they could be hunted down if necessary. and his teaching. Questioned Yeshua about his disciples and his teaching. If there were any heresies or blasphemies he could use to have Yeshua condemned. Yeshua is wiser than the high priest and did not give his adversary any unnecessary information that could be used against him. I have spoken openly to the world, Yeshua replied. I always taught in synagogues or at the temple where all the Jewish people come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said. He refused to incriminate himself. An official didn't like Yeshua's response and used physical violence to coerce Yeshua and humiliate Yeshua. When Yeshua said this, one of the officials nearby slapped him in the face. Is this the way you answer the high priest? He demanded. If I said something wrong, Yeshua replied, testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me? Yeshua repudiated coercion and force in the pursuit of truth. In a legal situation like this, it's wrong to use violence to compel someone to testify. Reason and an appeal to tell the truth are to be used. Not torture, not violence. Regrettably, this lesson has often been ignored, even by religious leaders and others. And this is a lesson that Islam is yet to learn. They use force and coercion. Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest, where his trial before the Sanhedrin, Israel's council, took place. And at the end of which, they condemned Yeshua to death for claiming to be the Messiah and the Son of God. John now shifts the scene back to Peter. Meanwhile, Simon Peter was still standing there warming himself. So they asked him, "You aren't one of his disciples too, are you?" He denied it, saying, "I am not." You know, maybe Peter's first denial was a mistake. Maybe he didn't hear the question clearly. Maybe he spoke without thinking. But the second denial could only be intentional. Peter has intentionally denied, repudiated his rabbi and Lord not once, but twice. One of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him. "Didn't I see you with him in the garden?" Again, Peter denied it. This is denial number 3, which means that Peter's denial, his renunciation, was absolutely intentional. Peter denied his rabbi and Lord not once, not twice, but 3 times. In the Bible, when something is said once, it's important. Each and every word is important, even if it is said only once. When it is said twice, when it's repeated, it means it's very important. Like, "Truly, truly, I say to you." When something is repeated 3 times, like "Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh," "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts," it is exceptionally significant. Peter's threefold denial was totally, absolutely, completely intentional. Again, Peter denied it, and at that moment, a rooster began to crow, just as Yeshua, the great prophet, had predicted a few hours earlier. God had revealed to Yeshua that Peter would disown him three times before that morning was over. Yeshua was a true prophet, always. John now shifts the scene back again from Peter and the courtyard to Yeshua. Then the Jewish leaders took Yeshua from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. The goal of the leaders was to have Pilate condemn Yeshua to death. That was the goal. By now, it was early morning, so a whole night has now passed. And to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. How ironic. These men were committing one of the greatest sins of all time, killing the Messiah, the Son of God, who's the ultimate Passover lamb, while being concerned about not becoming ceremonially unclean by entering the house of a Gentile, so that they would be able to eat the Passover lamb. John is emphasizing something very important, that someone could be so deeply religious and committed to observing laws and ceremonies and every minutia of religion while being so far from God and sinning greatly against God. So Pilate came out to them because they would not come in to his home, and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" The Romans had an advanced legal system with legal procedures and laws. For a trial to be fair, specific charges of violation of Roman law had to be brought against the accused. The Jewish leaders, however, did not bring a specific charge, only a vague accusation of criminality. "If he were not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." That was not a sufficient legal response, and Pilate understood that this was an internal Jewish dispute. Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." But since the Roman government had taken away the right of capital punishment from the Jewish people, a trial by the leaders would not accomplish their goal. "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. John wants us to know that the leaders' insistence that Yeshua be tried by the Romans and found guilty by the Romans so he could be executed by the Romans fulfilled another prediction Yeshua made. This took place to fulfill what Yeshua had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Remember, Yeshua said, just as Moses lifted up the snake in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, referring to his death by crucifixion on a cross. Yeshua was a true prophet. He was never wrong about anything, even future events. The Roman governor acquiesced to the demand of the leaders. He began to examine the young rabbi. His first question to Yeshua reveals that Pilate was aware that a charge of rebellion could be brought against Yeshua if he claimed to be the king of Israel. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Yeshua, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" You need to know that only someone Rome allowed to be king could proclaim himself to be a king. Claiming to be a king without the approval of Rome was rebellion against Rome. Are you the king of the Jews? Yeshua knew he was the Messiah and the son of David and Israel's true king. But instead of answering Pilate's question, he responded to Pilate's question with a question of his own, designed to determine Pilate's spiritual interest. Is that your own idea, Yeshua asked? Or did others talk to you about me? I think Yeshua was trying to determine if God was at work in Pontius Pilate, making the Roman governor aware that Yeshua was Israel's true king. But Pilate's response revealed that he had no spiritual interest in Yeshua. He was simply trying to find out if Yeshua was guilty of a crime against Rome. "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Yeshua was wiser than the wisest of the Jewish leaders, and he was wiser than the shrewdest Roman leaders. He knew he was being maneuvered into a trap where a charge of rebellion could be brought against him, and he did not cooperate. He replied to Pilate's question, "Are you the king of the Jews?" with an amazing answer that was both true and non-threatening. Yeshua said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." I love this answer. Yeshua told Pilate the truth, but not all of the truth. What he told him was true and was sufficient, not misleading. He acknowledged he was a king. "My kingdom is not of this world." He acknowledged he was a king, but a king of an otherworldly kingdom, heaven. He was not interested in ruling Israel, at least not right then. He knew he would later, but he did not reveal that to Pilate. And the proof that he offered, that he was not a threat, he had not encouraged or armed his followers to fight for him. That proved he had no intention to rebel against Rome. He was not a threat to the Roman Empire. However, Pilate seized upon Yeshua's statement that he was a king. "You are a king then," said Pilate. Yeshua answered, "You say that I am a king," which can be understood to mean, "You say I am a king, but I'm not claiming to be an ordinary king." Or, "King's the term you are using. That's not the way I like to refer to myself. You say that I'm a king." Yeshua clarified that the purpose of his first coming was not to rule as king. It was something very different. "In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth." Everyone, the Jewish people and the peoples from the nations like Pilate, everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Yeshua came to earth for several reasons: to atone for the sin of the world, which he is in the process of doing here, to reveal what God is like, which a greater revelation than any who were able to reveal what God was like before him. He came to teach us. He came to tell us the truth. "I was born, I came into this world to testify to the truth. Humanity is so confused, so delusional, so out of touch with reality, so deceived about the most basic truths like God and the way of salvation, that we do not know what is real or true. Yeshua is the greatest teller of truth. He came to let us know what is real, what is true, the way things really are. If anyone wants to know the truth about God and the way of salvation, they must listen to Yeshua. If Pilate was interested in knowing the truth, here was his opportunity that Yeshua was giving him to find out more about ultimate truth. But Pilate was not interested in pursuing the issue of truth with Yeshua. What is truth? retorted Pilate. Pilate was not interested in discovering more truth. He had found out what he needed to know. Yeshua was not guilty of breaking Roman law. With this, he went out again to the Jewish leaders, gathered there, and said, I find no basis for a charge against him. Not welcome news for the Jewish leaders. Pilate knew Yeshua was innocent. Pilate wanted to release the young rabbi. Pilate came up with a strategy that might mollify the Jewish leaders and spare Yeshua. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews? But Pilate underestimated the hatred of the Jewish leaders toward Yeshua and their intention to kill him. They rejected Pilate's offer. They shouted back, no, not him. Give us Barabbas. John informs us, now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. Barabbas was a rebel. Not Yeshua. Yeshua was loyal, true. Barabbas means son of the Father. Yeshua is the true son of the true Father. So, sadly, ironically, the Jewish leaders chose a rebel against their true king, which made the leaders the real rebels. The leaders chose a sinful son of a sinful father, Barabbas, instead of the true son of the true father. And that decision removed these leaders from being legitimate sons of God. Sadly, the majority of the Jewish people of that time and since that time have followed these leaders and their decisions, and have continued in their spiritual rebellion against God and their spiritual illegitimacy. Breaks my heart to say it, but it's true. We end here today, the end of chapter 18. Next week, Lord willing, we are going to celebrate another salvation, the deliverance of the Jewish people 500 years earlier from Haman, the prime minister of the Persian Empire, who wanted to commit genocide against all the Jewish people. God rescued us using Mordecai and Esther. That's next week. Then, Lord willing, we will return in 2 weeks and continue with John's vivid account of the trial and the horrific sufferings and death of Yeshua, one of the most important things that ever happened. followed by his resurrection, which is also one of the most important events in history, and an event of life-changing, world-transforming significance. Let's pray.